This is Thorne's YouTube channel. Make sure you're tuning in, hit and subscribe.
Must be tough times to be a Carrigan hater right now. I can only imagine during this tournament, you must really have been feeling the stress. You must have just been, I can't believe it. I can't believe he keeps getting away with it. How does he do it? Oh, he's just, it's significantly fewer frags than any ideal should have, but just, he keeps getting away with it. How does he keep winning these games? Oh, it can't be tactics. Tactics don't exist. You just go up here, go here, and just frag and juice across there. Oh, you know what? Oh, it reminds me of that Thorin. How does he get away with it too? He's just old. Everyone thinks he knows about the game, but yeah, what level's even he on, face it, eh? What's his premier rank? Oh, he can't keep getting away with it. You know what? Like Carrigan, I can keep getting away with it. Just like you can keep getting away with saving 10% on all Game of Subs products using the code. What do you think it is? Is it Carrigan? No, it's Thorin, because it's Thorin's channel. I'm just happen to be talking about Carrigan. The code is Thorin, Thorin, which then gets you 10% off. Now, obviously, Carrigan and Falcons and Nico and everyone in Falcons has won the major, haven't they? They've won the IM Claude major, which was what, the fifth CS2 major. By the way, Carrigan's been in the finals of four of them. Pretty good, right? He obviously was in the first two. Then he skipped Austin because Simple decided to just play like a bomb in that quarterfinals, even though it was actually still a close game. Then he was in the final of Budapest. I'm still debating whether I should say Budapest or Budapest. In general, I try to say it, other people from the place say it. And then obviously now he just made the Cologne final and actually won this one. He's obviously 2-4 in major finals even. So there's a whole bunch of things to talk about in this video. And if you don't know, I tend to use my wrap-up videos for the team that wins the tournament to also do like a little breakdown of the team and speculate on the future. Even though some would say I'm throwing that away, I could really just make this video 5 minutes long just about the get all the views. And I could do a separate video that's really about how Falcons play. But whatever, we'll bundle it all together. If you see my work, I tend to do my work in a very holistic manner where it all adds together and builds off each other and references each other. And some things will be repeated, but for the sake of emphasizing an element or building upon it, etc. So this will just be one of my initial sketches after the major. Then I'll have all my talk shows as well, and I'll have other content and substacks and all sorts of good shit coming. So first things first, in winning this tournament, yes, let's start at the very top. We have a bunch of big narratives, don't we? Like Nico finally won his major. I'll get to why later, but there's even a really cool like sort of element to that narrative that I actually think is dope, which is Nico, if you know the reference, didn't win the Ray Bork, what else, Gary Payton type ring where you won a ring, but at the end, not really playing your role, not really as who you are. And therefore, actually, that ring doesn't help you in any debate about how great were you at your peak and as a star player and one of the all-time great players when people do GOAT debates. This one, actually, as I'm going to talk about later, actually does count like that for Nico. That's one of the dopest parts because how he played in the final. In the end, it doesn't count in the sense that he isn't in his prime. You can't say in his prime he ever won a major. But I actually think the way he performed was as good as most people who've been MVPs of a major, so we'll get to that later. Also, if you are Carrigan, yeah, this is a big deal. You've now won a CS2 major as well as a CSGO major. If you'd have actually gone one win and then what would it have been, 5 losses in the finals, yeah, I think that actually would be considered a stain on your career to some degree, because not all of those were you an underdog in the final. Some of them you were actually a favourite and you lost. I even think personally you were a favourite in this one, even though it was more of a 50-50, I guess, because no one really knew if Falcons would be able to keep it up in all the playoff series. Most importantly, obviously Falcons themselves have won the majors. That means Zonic gets 6 majors. Now he's just won a CS2 major as well. By the way, not only has he won majors in both games, CSGO and CS2, he's also won majors in 1.6, but they were unofficial. But more importantly, people are missing this detail. He's now won majors with like 3 different superstar AWPers. He's had Device, Zewu, and Monacy. By the way, who else has won majors with those players? The only person is Extaz with Zewu. That's it. No one else has won with these star players. So don't miss me like, yeah, but he had that star player. Yeah, other people have had those star players too, mate. Where are their majors? Exactly. Then also, he's won with 3 different organisations. So he won with Astralis. By the way, he didn't build that squad. Actually, Carrigan and, funnily enough, the other people from TSM did. But he took that squad and won the major with them. Then he won the major with Vitality, after Vitality being around quite a few years, with a core that people knew. And then he won now with Falcons, where he actually built the project from basically nothing. If you remember the bombs they had in the team when he joined, and then what he's got them to at this point in time. We'll talk about that later too. So, at the outset, obviously the big news is that it wasn't Vitality winning, or even a Spirit, or whoever else out there people think as well. Na'Vi, they would have been in the mix, obviously. So if we go and look at this tournament, let's just look at the results first, because in doing so, we'll then be able to talk about all the different people who won the major, how they played, and how Falcons' victory went for them overall. In the stage three, when they got to start, you had Falcons go 3-1. They beat G2 in a close match. They lost to BetBoom in a close 2-0, but that was one of the only times they didn't win a map in a series. They beat Monty 2-1, it was close. They beat Na'Vi 2-1, it was close. Then they went to the playoffs as a 3-1 team. We'll get in a second to the relevance of this. So if we look at some of these results, though, in the game against G2, by the way, on paper, like a not too easy starting point. G2 is sort of like I'd say a gatekeeper of elite teams. If you beat them, you're probably an elite team. They themselves aren't an elite team though. So to me, this was actually a statement win out the gate. It was close, admittedly. Like, true, Falcons could have won Inferno, but also, let's be real, absolutely, G2 could have won Ancient. That's the map that's historically been their best map the last few months. And it was an OT session. But, spoiler, Falcons have proved, as we'll talk about in a minute, to be amazing at OT sessions and winning close games and winning in three maps and winning on maps that maybe, traditionally, the other team should be favoured on. But it's Carrigan, so he does Carrigan bullshit and he pulls it out at majors. This was in the group stage, not on the stage, admittedly. So you look at this series, the obvious thing that jumps off the page immediately, look, Heavy God played great for G2 the whole tournament, but he is sometimes just left on an island for me. Meanwhile, Nico, who's not in the biggest star roles in the game, has an amazing fucking series. Azul gets his whole team. By the way, shout out to the dickhead G2 CEO. Could have kept Nico, could you? Maybe you fucking should have. Here's what I want to know. How do you keep your job and say shit like that, homie? Just my thoughts. Honestly, played dope as well. And so as a result, Kiyosuke was good in terms of impact, but wasn't having a crazy series. Carrigan, considering his three maps, yeah, getting 30 kills, 10 kills a map roughly isn't good. Spoiler, we'll get to later. Carrigan also essentially tied a record of like least fucking HLTV rating to win an event, and his KPR was unbelievably low for the tournament. So this was, I think, like a decent win to show that, like, okay, people were maybe worried after losing to Legacy at CAC. This is a decent win to set you back on track. Then you played against BetBoom. On paper, this should be an easy game because obviously BetBoom himself are working with stand-ins. Maybe that's the only way you can counter Carrigan. You've got to have stand-ins as he's the king of stand-ins. And in a way, he was the stand-in, although not really because he's a full-time member of the squad. But he's new to the team. He's had, what, 60 days with them? He'd had 8 days before the first tournament. Then he had to go back-to-back tournaments. So actually, you would expect Falcons on paper should win this, but BetBoom was playing unbelievable. It wasn't until the playoffs that really slowed down. Still a close series. Full regulation rounds on Nuke, which was the BetBoom pick. Falcons tried picking into Ancient. It was just narrowly won by BetBoom, who mainly got it done on CT side. You go look at the series, you immediately know why it happened. Because look, this is actually a bad series for Kiyosuke. Nico's not particularly good. Monacy's good, but he's not superstar level. Tessa's actually, who generally was like a sleeper at this tournament, played very well, but it just didn't matter. And then caused Carrigan frags very poorly. It means you're just not particularly in the game. And the one thing BetBoom had going from the whole tournament is they don't have the proper roles and the real players. But I tell you what, they got some fragging though, haven't they? So the standing Flamus is killing the game. Zorty, who's not even supposed to be there, supposed to be Art Frost in theory, if you go back a few months. You actually look here. These weren't even the players popping off, but Magines has been their best player for ages and was at this tournament. They just had better firepower. They just did. Boomic calls a canny enough game. I think it's telling that Boomic, who himself is somebody who can operate in chaos, was one of the only people to be able to go head-to-head with Carrigan at this tournament and win. So there was the one loss, you're 1-1. Then in the 1-1 match, you face Monty. Now, everyone hyping them from previous stages would obviously say, hey, it's a dangerous game. It was. It was. In the group stage, Monty actually did look at times like they played without fear. They had the sort of beginner's luck element going for them. And actually, I think generally they played a very good tournament. I think they overperformed some of them. This was a winnable series. Right, true, Falcons could have won 2-0. They picked the just two themselves. But, to be fair to Monty, they could have won the decider. That's a really close game going into the second half. What? There's not a world where Monty can win 7 rounds and get to OT or 8 CT rounds on Mirage and win the game. There is. That's totally plausible. But this is another one of those series that will show you why Falcons were going to win this major. Because again, Nico's playing excellent CS. He's not in his best roles. On paper, for me, he's supposed to be your third star. You could even say in terms of the current roles he's had, because it's taken him a while to adapt to them, he was even more towards the supportive end at the beginning, just trying to make do. Now he's actually fragging out from those roles and having series like this way saves you. Monacy had a good series, but nothing mind-blowing. Kiyosuke was whatever in this one. Look, you look on the T side, he still did decent work, but nothing crazy. On the other side, yeah, maybe you could say that like Rain Waker underperformed a bit. That's probably a bit of an issue right there. But actually, Monty generally gave it a good performance. Then you had the Na'Vi one, which is how Falcons got out 3-1. Na'Vi is the number two team in the world. They were the second favourite for most people to win the major, even though to me, it would only be if someone else beat Vitality, which did end up happening, but their problem is it was Falcons and they didn't even get to the playoffs. Just Na'Vi's luck. And obviously, Na'Vi has an issue hitting the same crazy highs of individual skills. You look at some of the other teams out there, like Spirit, Vitality, Furia. You can just imagine those teams coming along and people playing out their mind and it might get hard for Na'Vi. This was a banger series, though, because if you didn't watch this series, okay, Falcons giga smacked Na'Vi on Dust 2. By the way, Na'Vi was just clearly off their game at this major. That's a really good map for Na'Vi, Dust 2 normally. That's one they like. Then on the Mirage, which was Na'Vi's own pick, Na'Vi smacked them. Okay, fair enough. That's fine. The problem here is this. Carrigan actually got into a position where Na'Vi's left Ancient and Anubis, presumably thinking, since Falcons had never played an official game of Anubis with Carrigan, well, there's no way he's going to go straight into that, is he? So presumably he's going to let us pick Ancient. He's going to pick into Ancient as the decider because both teams like Ancient. Na'Vi likes it, might be their best map. Falcons appeared to like it, we're picking into it earlier. If you're Na'Vi, this is a perfectly fine veto. You've done a good job here. The problem is this. In the end, Carrigan indexed into Anubis and gambled on the Anubis, and the Anubis, I'll set it up now, ended up being the real reason Falcons won this major. Because after this, it wasn't even just the decider. Carrigan just started making it his pick. And every time you played him, if you were Na'Vi, you had zero information to go off in a demo. If you were the next team, Vitality, you had this one game to go off. And even then, it's the decider. Will he dare pick that as in the major playoffs? Then if you're Spirit in the semis, well, he's only played against Na'Vi and against Vitality. And some of that was like individual players popping off at the end of rounds. Maybe that doesn't happen when we play him. We've only got two demos. In the final, if you're Furia, you only have three demos to go off, even though they're some of the best teams in the world. And a lot of it looks like Carrigan's just pulling loose late calls and doing snap timings and reads. Well, that's going to be different against our team. And also, it's probably just Kiyosuke getting lucky. And look at this bullshit shot over here that Monty hit. What the hell? Tessess keeps fragging out of his mind on Anubis. Well, that can't continue. And the problem is, I don't blame any of these coaches and any of these IGLs on these other teams. This is the only person in history, he's called Carrigan, who can do this shit. Like, I want to make a quick point here that I will expand upon later in this next series. Because, oh yeah, and also in this series, by the way, obviously it helps that Monty was fucking smurfing. Tessa's had a mega series, but by the way, a lot of that was also from the Anubis. That's where he got most of his kills. Nico was good, Kiyosuke was good, so it didn't matter that Carrigan was shit. It just didn't matter. Now look, obviously we didn't have the star performances on the side. Like, where's Mikaze? That's the guy who was carrying this season for Na'Vi. Bits kind of a bit meh. Wonderful was good, but nothing crazy. He just came off an MVP at IEM Atlanta, remember? So yes, true, Na'Vi also helped out, but then we get to the quarters. And you look at the draw, if you're Falcons, that's all well and good. That might get you hyped so that Thorin on Hot Take Point makes a hot take of like, they can win the major. But you look at this bracket, this is why I made it a hot take. Because the hot take, if you look, doesn't make any sense because of the bracket draw. So they're playing Vitality. I think the greatest team to ever play Counter-Strike, any version, and still a very good team, even though on this particular day they played like shit. They were playing fine in the Swiss. ZWU had great stats in the Swiss stage if people don't know. The problem is, when you get this bracket, you're supposed to instantly just lose the first match. Yes, you can build all those reasons. Yeah, but historically, Falcons without Carrigan could beat them. They have the firepower if it turns up. But how many ifs are you stacking together? Then there's the whole thing of like, Carrigan's amazing in playoffs if he dares to go into a veto, but will he dare do it? Or Carrigan's really good at making the other team uncomfortable. Let me just make a quick point. It's only Carrigan. That's why it's right that you say Carrigan does all, not just like, but if you can make Vitality uncomfortable, other teams can't make Vitality uncomfortable. They've tried. Oh, but if you can match their firepower, teams very rarely can match their firepower. Oh, but if you can pick into a map they're weak on, they're barely weak on any maps. Most teams have tried picking into it. Shout out Na'Vi. It just doesn't work that often. So the real issue is this. Only Carrigan can do this. And here's why. Because Carrigan and Carrigan's teams can play when they are uncomfortable. That is the key part people are missing. You can try and make Vitality uncomfortable, but if in doing so, you make yourself uncomfortable and you can't handle being uncomfortable, you need everything to be awesome to play at your highest highest level, then you're not going to beat Vitality and it wouldn't work for you. You'd actually get bodied way harder if you tried doing and picking the way Carrigan is picking. I also want to just point this out. People keep saying this thing. You know, it's one of those buzzwords I hate when they keep scoring. It's the confidence that Carrigan gives his teammates. Yes, but here's the thing. The confidence isn't the way he looks at them. The confidence isn't going, nice, Ilya. The confidence isn't going, Nico, I want you to play like this. The confidence is, you know it's Carrigan. You've seen him do this before. You know how he makes these calls in games before. The confidence comes, I always say this, confidence comes from competence. And Carrigan is the most competent IGL ever at being with a new roster, fucking with the veto, saying, lads, don't even worry about it. Just trust me on this one. I know what I'm doing. He is the greatest ever to do it like that, especially with international rosters, totally different players. He's probably the best IGL ever at working with stars and getting the most out of them and then figuring out the roles for other people to fit in the puzzle. The guy's fucking unreal. So this is really, this performance, even though you can look and say it was Modesty, it was Nico with the stars, and Kessess was like above the level you'd expect for his roles he's been putting in, then Kiyosuke was a monster on the T side and was the best performer in the playoffs. Yeah, but all of that is orchestrated by the maestro Carrigan, because it was his calling style that won all these games. You can go and look, and literally in the group it's already happening, but in the playoffs especially, when other teams do get nervous, when it's the pressure of the stage, when you've failed as many times as Carrigan has and you've called the ballsy for so many years, and you're the only one not afraid. You know how in sports, when you would get like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, Larry Bird, fucking who else, Wayne Gretzky, Tom Brady, people like that, and you put them in like a tense late game scenario where you're going to do something big to win the game. One of the reasons why they're so confident is they've done it a million times. They know they can do it, and they know the other guy's scared and worried and doesn't know if he can do it, and that makes it their playground. They're better in the hardest parts of the game in that sense than they would be in the normal part of the game when someone else might be better than them. So as a result, every person, when they would lose to these guys, ah, damn it, I almost had him. Look how bad he was playing before, and I was playing great. Mate, get a ticket and join the queue. There's a million fucking losers who are great players and teams who have the same story, because it isn't a fluke. These guys have consistently done it in their careers. That's actually their edge, is that. Not even just being an overall better IGL player, caller, whatever you want it to be. So you look, you have to beat Vitality first. Already an incredible challenge. Then in the semis, I'm sorry, I always knew it was going to be Team Spirit, even though it was close. The main thing here is, yes, you could shade, like I said, when they don't have their coach. So if you get into a tight scenario, by the way, that's perfectly set up for Carrigan and his calling style, yeah, you've got a chance. With that said, let's be real. If Don could frag that of his mind in this series, I still think that actually they lose. By the way, spoiler, if Ziwu played the way Ziwu normally does, I think Vitality beats Falcons. If Donk plays the way Donk usually does, normally and in major playoffs, I think Spirit beats them. And then in the final, I actually don't think it would have mattered how Molodoy, Kayserau played it. So I think that's the only one, is actually when they got to the final, I think they were favoured. Aside from that, I actually think those other teams should have been favoured both times. So if we go and look at the Vitality series, they did the Anubis pick. Even then, it was really close. Vitality almost nicked it. I don't think people are giving Vitality enough credit. Ziwu, for his standards, played like shit and wasn't even relevant on some of the maps. Flames had some hard times. And on top of all that, they still almost won this series on every single fucking map. You can make a case Vitality should have won all three maps. So the Anubis Falcons barely stole it out of their fucking arses. But they did, right at the end. Big clutch players. Then on Inferno, true, Falcons is in this game. It's a really cool game. But they had to win some mad bullshit rounds in that first half to even be in that position. And I thought Vitality, actually, towards the end, was coming on strong and did look like the better squad, the best team in the world. The decider, people are never going to credit this. It's so crazy. Do you not remember some of those utterly fucking bonkers plays that they were making? How about that one where, wasn't this the game where Tessus was on the other side of the Xbox between the double doors and the Xbox? And he was like shooting people above him and like this when he had like one health or five health or something fucking absurd like that. And then you had the round where Monacy peeked into Mezzi. Oh, mate, it was ridiculous some of the players you had to pull out late. But that ended up being the thing that continued through the playoffs. Yes, they were also excellent Falcons at like low buys and force buys. Fucking, by the way, they were amazing on pistol rounds. I think they went to something like 10 and 3 or something in pistol rounds. True, they would often give that away and immediately lose the force to the team afterwards. But the point here is they were always dangerous and they were able to just steal some crazy. Even Carrigan by the end of the tournament, especially in the final, was able to have some crazy kills, including with pistols. You were like, how's that happening? He's still got the worst stats ever, but you pull out impact kills at that. So I actually think people are underestimating that Vitality was really good and was a good challenge, even if they weren't on their game. I mean, let's be real. First things first, this is like a fucking underperformance by ZywOo. This isn't even an average day. This is really bad. And also, where's Flames? The guy that people were telling me, look at his numbers. Maybe he's better than Donkers. No, shut the fuck up. Shut your fucking hole and just put hot dogs in it. It's all it's good for, homie. Kiyosuke, obviously, I don't give a fuck that he had 50 deaths here. If you could pop 52 kills against Vitality with the style he plays, watch. 25 openers. That's mega. I always think opener, I don't care as much about the plus minus. I want to see the impact. If you can get the big openers that someone like this guy can, the others have a chance to win the game. Obviously, Modesty was mega, but even he wasn't like his uber peak level. Actually, on CT side, Kiyosuke played really well. And then obviously you have like Tessus holds, but this was actually the Nico Chill series. This wasn't that good one from him. Then you go to the semis, you play in Spirit. Now look, Spirit looked like demons up until this point, but that G2 game should already have given you pause because in that game, they already looked like, let's be real, if Magics didn't win that amazing 1v4, I think this loses the series outright. It was super close anyway. And then obviously they don't have their coach, so they're actually at a massive disadvantage compared to all the other teams in the playoffs. They have Zhab Zhabich, Toad, the son of Toads, basically, if you don't know what that means. That's who their fucking coach is. So, look, it was cool they made it this far. If Donk had played insane, they still could have made the final and won the major, but that's just how insane Donk is. You go and look, in general, in Stage 3, people don't know, Tanae didn't play very well. I know he had, like, a good map here, because he played well on the Mirage, which, admittedly, they won. So he played really well on that one. Aside from that, though, this is all right, but it's nothing mega. You needed more than that. Shiro actually was the one who smurfed. What's sad is Shiro hasn't shown up to all those playoffs, seemingly, in games, in semis and finals. It's usually when he drops off and Donk has to hard carry. Shiro actually had an insane fucking series. He was mega. Look at what he did on the Anubis, 27-17. They lost that one. Just to the decider, he's doing what he fucking can. Sure, he's still Shiro, so he gives up certain rounds. He doesn't always go for the clutch in the same way, and he plays a little bit more conservative with the op. That's all true. But I actually thought he played great. If Donk had played anything, look, he has a series where he got killed more than he killed guys. He got outfragged by literally three fucking players. Three different players on Falcons outfragged Donk. This is not anywhere close to a normal Donk performance. On the other side, you have good, very good performance from Monacy, but nothing like out of his mind. It's just the fragging's excellent. Kiyosuke had a pretty good series. Nico had a pretty good series. Tessus played well for his roles. Yes, Kerrigan was shit. Okay. But actually, Zontik is almost matching him. Go look again on the T side. Monacy fucking insane numbers. Donk actually kind of whatever for this series. Nico, good CT stats. Tessus good on the CT side. Another thing about Falcons is, I hate when people say this, every single championship isn't where everyone contributed was really important. That's not true. There's been a number of series and tournaments where people have had bad stats, but someone did carry them in the big games. I think Donk's done that in the past. There's been tournaments where someone won a major and the other player even played bad in his roles or was underwhelming, but it just didn't matter because of how the dynamic went, or you got easy opponents, or you fluked it, or there was some bullshit. Well, actually, this is one of the few tournaments ever where I think everyone on this team did something of meaningful value, and we'll get to that later. So you got to the final. I think you were already a favourite once you got to the final. The reason why is Furia would have to leave the Anubis out because they don't play Ancient. And so as a result, you're always going to win the Anubis. They're not a good team on that. You look elsewhere. Mirage, for me, has always been massively about how good is Molodoy. And he's, even though I think he was very good in this tournament, they played easy opposition. So I think there was a way that Furia could have won, which is they could have made the final without being tested. Meanwhile, Falcons is fighting for their life against G2 and Na'Vi and Monty. And they get there and they beat Vitality and Spirit. And at the end, it's like, how many more miracle calls have we got in us? How many more times can we win when it's impossible? That's what's happened with some of the past Kerrigan teams, hasn't it? When they've made it through the gauntlet of always getting the hard side of the bracket, with the exception of the last major at Budapest. This time around, I actually thought that played against Furia. I think they weren't properly tested elsewhere in the tournament. And so they didn't come in. They came in excellent form in terms of stats, but they'd been farming easy opposition for my money. I mean, Aurora in a semi-finals is about as close to a free fucking final as you can get. Again, the joke there would be like, I made it to a major final after playing Aurora in the semis. So yeah, it's like saying you got a free happy toy in your Happy Meal, mate. Everyone would get that. What are you talking about? You know how many people wish they played Aurora in a semi-final of a fucking major, homie? The problem here, obviously, is Falcons never got, Furia never even got 9 rounds on any map. They never got anything. Even though, I will say, all three of these maps had competitive moments, and it was really back and forwards in the first halves. It was really fun. The problem is, overall, Que Serrato didn't perform at the level you'd hope. Molodoy was good, by the way, just wasn't as good as Monacy. Yekindar was off his game big time. And Yuri, who actually also, this is why people thought maybe they could win, it wasn't, it's because they had easier opposition. Just like the second season of last year in IEM Rio, he was playing really, really well in terms of numbers. So you thought, mate, he can actually outperform a Tessis at the sort of supportive roles. That can give you an edge there, that can balance it out, and then your big stars come out. It didn't happen. Meanwhile, actually, Nico was the best player in the final. He was really fucking good, even though he's not playing all those star roles. He's playing Lurky. Look at the shit he has to do on Anubis, so he's just to spend half his fucking game just looking over at the A site and doing nothing and just trying to hold someone there. Every now and then kill them if they come out, every now and then peek in to keep them honest. It's the most boring shit of all time, but I tell you what, he was killing it doing that. And he did a really good floor to the game so that they could constantly attack the B site and do late round hits. Kiyosuke played very well. If you don't know, he was the best statistical player in the playoffs. Monacy played well. It's just he's Monacy. So when he only gets 46 kills in three maps, you think, wasn't that crazy? Because he's Monacy. I do think he's the MVP of this tournament. Tessa's actually had kind of a meh final. Doesn't matter in that sense. And Carrigan played like shit in terms of numbers. But he did have a couple of massive rounds, didn't he? And he had some moments on Mirage and on Inferno that were just like, holy fuck, how is this happening? How on earth is this happening? So I do think in the end, what a baller performance. And let's go and look at some of the other details about this win. So first of all, Carrigan is now the oldest person to ever win a major. He previously held that record himself, by the way, when he won back in 2022. That's why Carrigan is one of one. Because if you were to say something like, it's unlikely that you'll win a major as an IGL, let's say, I mean, I think he won it when he was 32 before, over the age of 32, well, you'd be right. In the vast majority of cases, you'd be right. Because guess what? Carrigan is one of one. We don't even know yet if Apex, when he's 36, will be able to win majors still. Glaive's off fucking retired, mate. Fallen's somewhere like 35, and he only made the final because he had some bullshit driving. I think on paper he should have been able to make the Budapest final and won it as well. And I still think Furia could win a major. It's just they're a bit of a dark horse now that the team levelled out, unlike the second season of last year. So when you can use rules and patterns against the general spread, because that's what the rule of pattern says. Carrigan is what you call an outlier. To even make a pattern, you remove him and look at the others. So the whole point is, does this now mean, actually, it's no big deal, you can be 36 years old and win a major? No, because there's only one guy can do that so far, it's called Carrigan. And the same logic's going to apply to most things. Like, just like that, he also had some of the worst fragging ever, didn't he? As B-Tram showed, Carrigan has now completed, for a season, the worst statistical season ever by an IGL. Like, more laughable than fucking my boy MSL, who used to be a low fragger. Cadian in 2025 with Astralis when we all laughed at him. Madger in 2025 in season two when he's one of the reasons I think they didn't win some more championships more than just that single one that they won. PGL Bucharest or whatever it was. Hooksy back in 2023 when we were all making fun of him when he used to get carried by the other players, etc. Look at this stat here. He went 4-21 on T-sides in a major final. But did you see how comfortably his team won the major final? It wasn't about him getting T kills, because what he did to the rest of the team collectively not only superseded his individual performance in the game. Remember, IGL isn't like a pure stats thing. They're adding more than just what they do fragging wise in the game from a HLTV formula, from fucking server logs, aren't they? So it's the impact he had on others that made it happen though. So let's look at some of that. First of all, how about Kiyosuke? Let me remind everyone who Kiyosuke was before Carrigan joined Falcons. It went like this. Kiyosuke isn't even the best rookie of 2025 because that's Molodoy. And in fact, you might even say, if you looked at how the first 3 to 4 months of 2026 went, if we expand that, because some of these guys, Molodoy played a little bit more than a year by the time we got to this major, but there was three rookies that had played at tier one, like almost a year by the time we got to this major, or a little bit more. It was Molodoy from Furia, Makaze from Na'Vi, and Kiyosuke from Falcons. You would have said 2 months ago, basically before Carrigan joined, a month and a half ago, that actually Kiyosuke is third out of even those rookies. You would go in this order. Molodoy overall, probably the best signing, but actually in early 2026, it was looking like Mikaze, because he was looking mega and the winning titles off it. And then you have Kiyosuke, who's a group stage merchant and looks really talented, but his timings are really weird, even on T-side. He certainly looks like he has massive choking issues in the playoffs, and he can't play the map Inferno. You add all that together, and what was everyone saying about Kiyosuke? Lol, you shouldn't have signed him, you morons. What are you doing? In fact, even Spirit should have just not got the Tenega. I should have bought him in the squad. God, he's Russian. He works with their team. He's like a mini dog. He could play with it. And everyone said, lol, $200 million. What was Zonic thinking, you moron? By the way, if you don't know, he was the highest rated player in these playoffs. 9 maps against 3 teams, by the way, who were ranked, I think, number 1, number 3, and number 5 in the world. 1.3 fucking rating over 9 maps in the playoffs. So what happened? What changed? Well, let's go and look. This is the last 20 maps down here of Keisuke with Kixan. His T-side rating's nothing to talk about. He's overall just all right. He's got good kills. That's pretty good, especially for a rookie, but he's dying more than he's killing. And his ADR's all right. Then you add in Carrigan, who, if you don't know, essentially Carrigan acted as like the brain trigger for when Keisuke should enter and do his crazy fucking insane aiming. Well, I actually think his overall pure aim is slightly better than fucking Donk's. It's another reason why he's actually more the next Nico than he is the next Donk. But he doesn't just always go hard entry. That's more the Donk style. Keisuke is more the guy where he plays off the guy who goes in first, and that's when you're going to get your best results. When they tried to make him go in first like they did with Kixan, I actually thought that was a massively flawed approach. It didn't particularly bring the best out of Keisuke. So you look at the first 20 maps for Carrigan, though, not even, by the way, I'm comfortable with just the first 20 maps. KPR is fucking unbelievable. Like, outside of Donk, this would make you like the best rifle in the world if you had these numbers, by the way, especially for an entry playmaker type guy. The deaths are almost the same, but the kills are just way more. The ADR's way more. Everything's way more. More multi-kills, better round swing. You even have the KST, kill assist, survive, whatever. You have it all. And here's obviously the main thing. Look at the T-side rating. Outside of Donk, that's basically probably like the best T-side player in the world. Flames earlier in the year could have come to, he can't now. This is unbelievable transformation with an 18-year-old kid who's in only his second major ever played. Because remember, he obviously couldn't play in the previous one. So there's one massive change, is the Keisuke one. Then let's just go and look at the whole team. So Falcons KPR, the king stat for me, kills per round. When both teams have at least 9 rounds, so we're looking now at the late map impact of Carrigan versus Kixan. Because I think actually there was even a stat like this. Kixan and Falcons used to lose the majority of the overtimes. Like literally they would win like 1 out of every 6 or something. Falcons with Carrigan win almost every single overtime session. They've been unbelievable. So you can see late in games, Tessess goes massively up in terms of kills per round. Keisuke goes up from already a good level to an extremely good level. Nico goes up from a good to above average level to a good level. And Modesty goes from a very good level to a mildly even better very good level. Like you look at that collectively, that means in late in the map, for all 4 of Carrigan's teammates are getting at least 0.7 kills per round. Right, yes, Kixan is massively better than Carrigan in terms of fragging in these scenarios. But if you add it all together, so it's 0.19. We'll do some quick maths on the other one, shall we? That's literally going to already be, so we've got 26 there, 36. We've got plus 0.4, and you're losing almost 0.2. So collectively, you are getting 0.2 KPR extra out of your team late in round. You know how OP that is? That's bonkers. And as Stiko says here, 9 overtimes, 8 wins. That's fucking insane. These are outrageous numbers to have. And that's what I want to just say finally about Carrigan. Then let's talk a little bit about the other players. So it goes like this. Carrigan has changed every player on his team to some degree. Honestly, I don't know that he's changed him massively. I think he just got more confidence in the calls from Carrigan and he just feels freer to play the game now. And because he's got other people fragging, and especially late games, you're not getting shit like in those finals and semis at the end of second season last year where it's just the Honestly show and he's having a hard carry. And even though he's got all these stars around him, it's just him. And he's having to play his heart out and still lose and get the MVP while losing in a final. Now he's got others playing excellently. See, look, Tessess, you can go watch the episode of Roster Mechanic I did with Luz Raposa. He's already looked way more comfortable in the game. He plays with Carrigan a little bit in some of the spots. His CT side game looks way better. And I'll just add this in because it'll make a point for the Nico point later. I watched the Falcons voice comms VOD since Carrigan joined. And this is where Nico has actually really emotionally developed as a person and almost as a captain figure himself in the team, because he is one of the most experienced players. Every time they would at the end of the round do that thing where, you know, you've had like Keisuke do three entries, so they're all like, nice Maxim, nice Keisuke, high five. Every time Morrissey carries, oh nice Ilya, sick, we're winning. No, everyone would always forget Tessus because he'd just be doing some like small nuanced thing, or he'd just get one kill, or he'd create some space, or he'd hold his position. What's cool is Kozniko himself is now playing out of his roles and he's not the main star of the team. Niko was cognizant of that. And so I actually saw multiple times in these videos, everyone would congratulate everyone else. And then only Niko would do this. He'd just go, good job, Renee, or nice, Renee. And you'd just think like, well, he only got one kill there. Yeah. That's because Niko could see the nuance of what Tessus was doing. And he actually made sure to keep that guy's spirits up and make sure, like, essentially, look, I'm acknowledging you did something good. I know the others are all focused on the other shit. I think that's dope. I think that shows, again, a level of, like, development in Niko of understanding what you can do beyond just shoot people in the surfer. I can tell you there's some very good players. Kyrie Irving was like this on the fucking Cavaliers, where they think the game's about them getting their shot, them getting their numbers, and you do the rest of the shit yourself. That's not what being a leader is, though, being a captain. Being a captain's elevating others and making sure they're on their game and they feel like they've been acknowledged and celebrated. And then also, Kiyosuke, you've already seen it. It's night and day. Before that, I think he had an unlike Donk. The thing Donk has that's OP isn't just his skill. He's got an amazing intuitive feel for how to play. I don't think people IGL him much on the T-side. I think he makes the decision himself and he goes off crazy feeling and makes it work. Kiyosuke has better aim slightly than Donk, in my opinion, but he doesn't have that feeling. That feeling, it might develop one day, it might never get it. It's the most unique thing ever about Donk as a player. Kiyosuke doesn't need it because Carrigan's doing that for him. Carrigan's going in like a humor flashbang and calling timings late in games. And so now, also think how OP that is for Carrigan. You've got this god-tier fucking rifler with an AK entry style who can peek into anyone as long as he has the confidence and the right setup to do it and can just headshot even the best players in the world the second he faces them. And I'll tell you what, Carrigan used that tip of the spear approach very effectively and he essentially got to do some crank shit and be the brain for Kiyosuke. And then Niko, I don't know that Carrigan did much to Nico's roles. I think Niko just felt more comfortable, and that in this team he doesn't have to have the same stress. Like, you're gonna choke, the whole team's gonna choke, and you're gonna choke. I think you've seen everything else come together. That actually Niko just played some awesome CS. So let's talk about that part, shall we? The fact that Niko won the major. Because what's sad is I told people this on shores. If you look at the old Falcons, well, if they win the major with Niko, even if you look at how he's playing the first tournaments with Carrigan, it's not really gonna make the whole thing like, hey, it doesn't matter that Niko didn't win a major in CSGO. No, it does. Because those conversations were up. Did Niko win the major at his peak? Did they win when he was the central focal point, the 1A option on a team? When he was the best rifle in the world, contender for best player in the world? Did he win? No, he didn't. So what's sad is you look at how he changed roles now. And unfortunately, I was really worried until basically the semis. Like, oh, fuck. They're going to win the major. And then it's going to be like when Niko first won kind of eats in. It's like, well, you did win kind of eats in, Niko, but you didn't do very well. Good job in it. I think I was the one that were like JKS and Hunt were the best players. You were kind of carried to that kind of eats in. Like in an argument about, did you win kind of eats in the sense of against the all-time great players, Olofmeister, Coldzera, all the, that doesn't work that well as a debate, does it? Because you didn't win it. That isn't the case now. Niko isn't even, this is what's dope. He had the performance you always wanted to have as a star without even being in all the best star roles. He actually did it this time, unironically, just in worse conditions. Now, true, he had stars elsewhere doing a great job. I think he was fucking unbelievable. I think this playoff run, if it wasn't for how insane Monis is, Niko would have been the MVP. Niko played as well in the finals, in the playoffs, as many people who've won MVP of majors in the past. In fact, better than a lot of them. And so what's cool is, it's even dope. Because what was my iconic line that I think Machine even lifted for the final, from my video I did for LFN? They always used to say about Niko, he's the greatest never to win a major. And my line was, better than most who did. Well, now he's also shown it. He's even done it to almost be an MVP, not even from his role. So I actually think this one can count for Niko in the sense of like, he's one of the best players ever and he won a major. Sure, he's not in his traditional roles, although I still think he could have, if he'd have had someone like Carrigan and made this development years earlier, it would have been possible. The stupidest thing about him was, holding it against him is basically just saying you failed on the bigger stage. It was never like you're not able to do it. I think some people conflate the two and thought he just wasn't good enough to win, or he just deserved to win or some shit. Like, no, this was one of the most bizarre cases of choking, and choking getting worse I've ever seen. And then, yes, bizarre decisions on rosters. And there's one last thing to say. Obviously, it's dope, isn't it, that Niko and Carrigan won the major together. This is where I think I've done a very good job. People just ignore this. I've made it a very nuanced storyline. It isn't just, Niko kicked Carrigan because he doesn't think Carrigan's good, and then he never understood Carrigan, and now Carrigan's won a major for him. He should go, I was wrong, and I never should have kicked it. It's not that simple. The reason why Carrigan doesn't have resentment towards Niko is, and I agree with this, I do think Carrigan was a choker back when he lost that final at the Boston Major. Because that wasn't a one-off incident. He'd lost the fucking final of IEM. Auckland to NIP. You had no business losing that, but you're five. Then after that, they lost the final to Fnatic, another BO5 at Katowice. You had no business losing that one. You can even go back, even the ECS they won, they barely won over Mouse. Like, it was outrageous how hard it was for that team to win close games with a mega roster of players. So I think, here's where Nico was right. Carrigan was a choker and needed to develop his game. My problem with Nico was always this. One, own it that you wanted him out of the team. It's obviously true. And two, who's better? That's my problem. It's like the wonderful in Na'Vi Arping situation. Who's better that I can recruit? I can't get Zimu, can I? So did you have, coming in to replace Carrigan, Glaive or some goated? No, you didn't. It's even worse. If people don't know, it wasn't just Adrian and Neo and Nico doing it himself. The rumour was, it wasn't a rumour, I've confirmed it in interviews. It was people, they were trying to get Exist. They were trying to get Flusher to swap to IGL. They were trying to get some ridiculous signings to come over that I think were ridiculous Hail Marys that wouldn't even work back then. Here's what I think's dope about the Nico Carrigan story. I think Nico went away and had to learn more about team dynamics. So I think at that point, he was like, just let me play my game, get people in who are cool and I can trust they do their thing. We'll win somehow anyway, because he's excellent. He's won a lot of tournaments even without great IGL. You go look elsewhere. Look, I do think he started choking more and more and more. That's why it's cool he then later teamed up with Carrigan. Because in the meantime, I think Carrigan going to Mouse made Carrigan have to face the fact that he choked and been kicked out of the top tier, build his way back up. Already in Mouse at the end of 2019, they started to get super clutch. When he got to FaZe again, they were already doping when they had shitty Olofmeister. And when they finally got Rops, they just took off completely. And he went from being the IGL you bet your house against late in a match when you're supposed to be winning and be epic, to the best to do it. He had the same exact development that Device had and became the best at his former weakness, which is one of the coolest evolutions you can get in sports. So I think what's really, really insane is Carrigan became the guy, you can see it from Katowice and from that Antwerp major in 2022 onwards, who he's the most comfortable when it's uncomfortable, because he's already had his heart broken a million times. He's been through the dark night of the soul. He's had his road to Damascus. Insert more cliches. The guy has been to the limit and essentially reformulated and transmuted himself into one of the ultimate winners and clutch fucking callers. He's become one of the best. So then you get Nico, his old teammate. They're both very good at their roles, but now Nico's the giga choker, and all of a sudden you bring him back with Carrigan and the effect is already apparent, isn't it? Now Nico's actually turned his game around. That's what's cool. They both had to go separate paths and learn and experience different things on the fucking hero's journey, and at the end they converge back together and all win together, don't they? If you don't know, Zonic was right to kick Carrigan. Carrigan at the end of the time with Astralis had lost some of his control over the team. They didn't have the same buy-in. They didn't believe in him late in games and in majors. He'd even lost his ability to properly do the meet VAP vetoes I always thought he was legendary and famous for, because people didn't trust him and what he was going on in practice. He had to go away and earn back that respect. So now he plays with Zonic 10 years later, and now it's actually Zonic that needs Carrigan for that reason and needs him to get the buy-in and needs him to work the players, and then Carrigan does it and then he wins the fucking major. This is a fucking movie. This is a shonen anime. This is your dream to watch some fucking dope piece of media where this happens. But if it was just fiction, you'd go, gosh, that would never happen in real life, because this story's better than fiction. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I think it's one of the dopest stories in the history of Counter-Strike. And you know what? Going forwards, on paper, Vitality should still be the best team. There should still, lurking somewhere, be an Na'Vi that's in the mix. Might even make a roster upgrade. I think Spirit could be deadly when Donk's back on his game with their coach and stuff. I think Falcons can be, if not the second best team, a constant elite team and threat to win every tournament in the second season. I would bet Vitality should be first. I think Falcons can be second. Third, maybe Spirit. Let's see what Na'Vi does in terms of a roster move. So I think, actually, this isn't just even a one-off in that sense. Falcons are here to stay. Then there's one last thing to say about Zonic, and it goes like this, but I'll expand this in my other content and shows. You can't just tell me, Zonic gets no credit at all. No, 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 wait a minute. All the things you held against him now have to be warranted and granted. So first of all, he's not the IGL, he's the coach. The coach doesn't literally control every aspect of the game. The second the game begins, he only communicates what happens in the comms and in his practice and prep before the game. The IGL has a massive impact on the game, as Carrigan's just showed. So if you're going to take Zonic recruiting Kiyosuke and use it against him, well, now when Kiyosuke's insane, when the IGL's there who can actually use him, now you have to give Zonic credit for making the gamble of signing Kiyosuke. Then how about having the balls to sign Kiyosuke? Well, you've already got Nico. Move Nico into the rules. didn't work those other roles when he had Kixan. Now it's working with Carrigan. Some of that credit also goes to Sonic. That was part of his vision. He did that before Carrigan even came. How about signing Monacy? I said on paper, I know that you're doing it because you have loads of money. It's still hard to get people like players like Monacy to come and join your project. You know, the BC game, CEO guy, keeps saying all the time, I asked every fucking great player in the world to join him. They said, no, yeah, because why are they going to join your project? Your project is simple electronics screaming in your face, loads of money, and we don't even know if the team will be any good. That's a shit fucking prospect. You have to sell them. You don't just sell them on the money. You sell them on the idea you're joining a Real Madrid Galacticos and we will win eventually and we'll all do it while making loads of money and being around superstars. That requires buying. Even Tessess, look, I would have said you made a mistake. I would have just kept Magus for the roles and the history and the secondary calling, and I would have kicked Tessess because I think Tessess should be instead in like the third star role on a Mouse or a FaZe or a G2. So actually even keeping Tessess was some crazy gamble. What did I tell you guys last year when they signed Kiyosuke? If this roster works, then basically Zonic's reinvented Counter-Strike. Like, we've never had a team where you have basically four aggressive players, but two of them are going to be in non-super aggressive roles. Because Tessess should be sort of an entry. Kiyosuke should be an entry playmaker. Nico should be an entry playmaker. Monacy's an aggressive AWP. Like, there's no space left in the team. But actually, then you did what? Well, he just got Carrigan and Carrigan fit. Sounds like he did a great job signing Carrigan then, didn't he? When he signed Carrigan, how many of you went to Hail Mary, but it won't work, of course? Or Carrigan's playing like shit. He doesn't even deserve to be the major. Well, what's Carrigan going to do with this team? They're still going to lose, aren't they? And it'll still be fail clowns, and they'll still be dickheads and sound. Well, then they won, didn't they, dickhead? Then they beat, I forgot to mention this, they beat the entire HLTV top six. Did you know that? Falcons themselves were number four. They beat number one Vitality, number two Na'Vi, number three Spirit, then they beat number five Furia, and number six is Legacy, and they beat them in the group stage of CSE, even if they lost the final to them. So at this point, they've done everything. They've done it all. They've fragged, the Carrigan have the worst numbers ever, worst KPR ever. They have had to have massive performances. When it happened. So at the end of all that, we're not going to give Zonic any credit. The guy who's won six majors with three different orgs, and he's won in two different games. He's won in 2017. He's won in 2018. He's won in 2019. He's won in 2023, and he's won in 2026. Oh, my bad. In that decade, did he only win in five fucking years or something? Give me a break. Anyone who actually thinks Zonic is a fraud and didn't do anything, I don't think you know what coaching is, mate. You know, a bad coach, even with Carrigan and all these people, would fuck it up. And miss me with the idea they never did anything. No, no. They never, with Monacy, won trophies. They did do something last year, didn't they, fuckface? They made the final of Melbourne. They made a fucking epic run at a blast. They were in a bunch of other finals. They had Monacy winning MVPs. They were still a really good team. They were still a team in major playoffs eventually. They just didn't win the big one, which is the only standard they're allowed to do. And now they've done it, people are still going to hate on Zonic when he's done the big one. Do you know how few coaches have won the major, even with the superstar players? How many have done it? Not many, I'll tell you right now. So give credit to Zonic as well. Everyone on this team deserves credit, including Zonic. Since time immemorial, great artists have been supported by patrons who believed in their work and wanted to contribute to their efforts. Well, what's more fitting than the greatest esports content artist being supported by my patrons, the Skrilluminati? So this video and the others on my channel was kindly supported by Toucan, Nikki, Jason, Jensen Gore, and you know it, a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to ask a question in my video AMA? Want teasers? See who the upcoming guests are? Maybe you want to suggest a topic or a guest for my content, or take part in one of those lengthy discussions where you get to set the topic. If any of these perks appeal to you or others, put your money where your mouth is and join the Skrilluminati today. Where? In the description box, there is a Patreon link.